this case is ready to go forward. If you are ready to proceed, please do so. And good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Scott Mahoney from the law firm of Fisher & Phillips, representing Harrah's Las Vegas, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. Mr. Baglin has filed a negligence suit alleging that Harrah's employees not adequately respond on October 19th, 2012, when he was in the workplace displaying symptoms which were consistent with the onset of a stroke. The district court correctly held, consistent with the precedent of this court, that any remedy that Mr. Baglin had was to be exclusively under workers' compensation laws. This court has held that for purposes of workers' compensation, an injury arises out of employment when there's a causal connection between the injury in question and the conditions of the workplace or the nature of the workplace. And here, that link is quite solid because the allegations are that that Mr. Baglin that Harrah's did not adequately respond, and that is integrally and tied into and linked to what policies Harrah's has to respond to workplace emergencies involving their employees, procedures and practices. Harrah's responded to the situation on October 19th as it did. On the other hand, if Mr. Baglin had happened to work next door at the Venetian may have had different policies, different procedures, different training for its employees. They may have reacted to the situation by promptly calling 911, and the outcome may be different than we had ending up in this case. Likewise, I think if you move from property to property, employer to employer down the strip or elsewhere in the valley, you would have a diversity of different reactions and responses to the situation based on the particular employer's training, policies, and procedures. So the risk that Mr. Baglin faced on October 19th was, how was it that his co-workers were going to respond to his medical emergency? And that is a risk that is intertwined substantially with the particular place where he happens to work. Now, this court has also decided in the past that there is a duty owed when certain persons face an immediate peril, and that duty is owed when a special relationship exists. The court has found that relationship to exist in a variety of circumstances, employer-employee being one, patron, innkeeper, guest, or patron being another situation. Now, Mr. Baglin's position is that if a patron had not responded adequately to his to his particular, his or her particular medical situation, then the patron would be able to file a negligence suit against the owner of the establishment for alleged breach of duty. So he reasons that the same remedy, Mr. Bagman should have the same remedy. He should be also be able to bring a negligence suit based on alleged inadequate response. The key distinction, however, is that the typical patron is not also going to be an employee of that establishment. In this case, Mr. Bagman, of course, was an employee of Harrah's and therefore has the right to pursue claims under workers' compensation that a patron would not ordinarily be afforded. So,
Mr. McGonigal, I just had one question. I think yes, we're backwards in the parties. I believe since we vacated the Court of Appeals decision, you're the respondent here, and the other side would normally speak first and last, so unless I misunderstand that. But would that be as it may, you know, I guess we're into the arguments
I
here.
I
was looking at, I was trying to get the parties straightened out. I know the Court of Appeals.
The Court of Appeals
decision has been vacated when the Court granted review, so we're back to square one where we were before that. But that being said, since we're here, is your argument basically that if somebody gets hurt on the job here, it's got to be classified as a workers' comp claim as opposed to some other type of cause of action because a sickness occurred there while the person was at work? What's the legal standard you're requesting us to adopt?
The standard I'm requesting is that workers' compensation should be the exclusive remedy under the two conditions that have been established by this court. First, that the injury arose out of the employment, which I've been discussing thus far. And
okay,
the second condition is that it occurred during the course of employment.
I think it's undisputed he got sick at work, you know, like that, or he may have been sick before he came in, but it was observed at work. So you feel it's a matter of law because the illness was identified at work, that would automatically make it a workers' comp claim versus an individual tort action.
Well, it's also, Justice Gibbons, it's also important to keep in mind what the allegations of the complaint are, and that is if this was simply a situation where it was alleged that that Harrah's was negligent because Mr. Bagman suffered a stroke while at work, that alone in and of itself wouldn't be enough. That would be a personal risk, and that would be outside the scope of workers' compensation. Of course, in the negligence suit, he would have to show that somehow something in the workplace caused him to suffer the stroke, which is a rather high bar. But the key in this case is the allegation goes beyond the suffering of the stroke. The allegation is, yes, he suffered a stroke, but the injury or damages that we're seeking to be compensated for is the employer's employee's failure to properly respond to the emergency medical situation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when those two facts or factors are coupled together that we would argue that it's exclusively when the scope of workers' compensation.
Okay.
If it was just Mr. Bagman gone to work and happened to have a stroke and they might have called 911, that would have been, I assume there would have been no allegation that Harrah's didn't adequately respond, and the only basis for a negligence claim would have been that somehow something in the work environment, stress or whatever, caused the stroke, which,
okay,
again, is not our
case. Thank you for clarifying that.
Sure.
At this point, even if we're somewhat backwards, you've got 7 minutes, why don't I have you sit down, let's have counsel, Mr. Bagman, get up, and that would give you a chance to at least respond to what he's about to say.
Thank you for
anyway, and then you get the last say. Also.
At least our criminal practitioner's got it right.
May I proceed, Your Honor?
Yes.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jeff Gallagher, and I represent Israel Bagman. This afternoon, I'd like to address three issues in this case. The first is whether the Court of Appeals was correct in determining that the injury to Mr. Bagman on October 19th, 2012 did not arise out of Mr. Bagan's employment.
Counsel, if I can stop you there. We kind of take the Court of Appeals decision they made up and set it aside. We're reviewing this to no one, so.
I understand, Your Honor. The second, may I proceed? And there obviously was some confusion. I also believe that I was to be the respondent to the petition. So, nevertheless, the second issue is whether or not there are genuine issues of material fact regarding whether or not Harris caused Mr. Bagan's injuries. And the final issue being whether the loss of chance doctrine, which is applied very often in medical malpractice cases, should also be applied to the unique facts of this case. With respect to the first issue, we first have to determine the type of risk faced by Mr. Bagan on that Friday afternoon more than 5 years ago. And as Mr. Mahoney began to talk about, Nevada recognizes three types of risk in an industrial injury setting. Those are personal risk, a neutral risk, and an employment-related risk. The employment-related risk is kind of the easy one. That's the guy who falls off the scaffolding at the construction site, where clearly the activity he's engaged in at the time of the injury is in direct correlation to the type of work he does. A personal risk is one where the injury would happen regardless of whether the worker was at work or sitting at home. If you're sitting at your desk and you have a heart attack, you could have been sitting at home at your kitchen table and had that heart attack. But in the middle, there is the neutral risk that is obviously neither obviously work-related or just personal. And in those cases, we have to apply the increased risk test that Justice Hardesty laid out in the Phillips case in order to find out whether or not that particular risk is one which arose out of the employment. So that increased risk test asks whether the workplace or its conditions, specific to the work being done, increase the risk to the worker in such a way as that it relates the injury to the job. And it's set forth again in Rio versus Phillips. In this case, the injury, I believe, to Mr. Bagan was a neutral risk. There's no direct correlation between his work as a house person and what happened here, as is, this is, the stroke itself may have been a personal risk, but again, the stroke is not the issue that we're here about. The stroke is clearly a personal risk. What we're talking about here is the failure of Harris to meet its duty to render aid to Mr. Bagan. And because that duty is the same duty that Harris owed to everybody on the property that day, including customers, other workers, they owed the same duty to everybody pursuant to Lee versus GNLV, there is no increase in that risk due to the fact that Mr. Bagan also happens to be an employee. Mr. Mahoney mentioned that our argument was that that the risk was how the that it was different because a patron might have reacted differently, but that's not the argument. Our argument is that had Mr. Bagan been a patron instead of an employee, Harris owed the exact same duty to Mr. Bagan patron or Mr. Bagan employee. And that duty is the duty to render aid in a situation which should have been obvious regarding the fact that Mr. Bagan was in the initial throes of a stroke. The testimony is uncontroverted that for about a 30-minute period on that afternoon, Mr. Bagan was in the presence of Harris employees, including Harris management employees, that at least three of those employees tried to talk to Mr. Bagan, and he was completely mute and made absolutely no response. The testimony is also uncontroverted that Mr. Bagan was drooling and that he was suffering from a facial droop. Those are all classic signs of a stroke. They're subject of multiple public service announcement campaigns and other general information that somebody in Harris' position should be well aware of. Certainly, with the thousands of people on the property at any given time, the risk that someone would be suffering a stroke and would be displaying those classic signs is one that they should be held to recognize. If there are no questions, I'll move on to question number two.
Do you have any case law that supports your position here? your colleagues on the other side of the aisle cite some cases from Arizona and a federal district court case that you distinguish in your brief, but I didn't see any case law that would support what you just said from anywhere. Do you have any?
It would support exactly which statement, Justice?
That an employee suffers a stroke on the job and the employer, his fellow employees, don't recognize it and fail to render appropriate medical aid, that is outside workers' comp. I know they vary state by state. The statutes are different. But do you have any law that would you could direct us to that would say, yeah, in that situation, that has a claim outside the workers' comp situation?
Well, I think this might be a case of first impression with regard to that issue, Your Honor, because this is a unique situation because we have an innkeeper who has the same duty. If they weren't an innkeeper, perhaps they wouldn't have that same duty to everyone that they do in this case. If they were a 7-Eleven or something like that, they would certainly still have the duty to Mr. Begwin as an employee, but they wouldn't necessarily have that same duty to everybody who walks in the store as Harris does pursuant to the lead decision. So I'm not sure that this specific set of facts or this issue has even ever come before the court.
I guess the question really, what is their duty? They're not doctors. So at what point do they determine you didn't have the flu and you should just come home?
Well, thank you, Justice Douglas. I think that's an excellent question. And I think the duty is, at a minimum, the duty is as it's laid out in the lead, which is to summon emergency help. In that case, you recall the gentleman choked at the Carson Street Cafe, and they called 911, the paramedics came, and the claim by the plaintiff in that case was that they didn't do enough. The plaintiff thought that the waitresses or the security officers who responded should have performed CPR or cleared the airway. But in fact, even after the plaintiff, the plaintiff's decedent, got to the hospital, even the doctors in the emergency room were not able to clear that airway. So clearly, that was a too high of a standard to put on those people. But if there's a subsequent discussion, it's an unpublished opinion by the court in the Charleston Hotel case, which says that maybe even just calling 911 isn't even enough. If you have the ability to do more than that, and that in that case was whether or not they should perform CPR or utilize an AED that was on the property, at that point, you might have to do even more than just call 911. But the conduct of Harris in this case was such that they did nothing. They did not call. If they had called 911, perhaps we wouldn't be here. Because I think in that instance, Mr. Harris would have gone to the hospital. The sign of the stroke probably would have been recognized even by the EMTs or the security guards who were trained in that type of thing. And we wouldn't be here because they would have met their burden. They would not have breached their duty. So I think the duty is at least, at a minimum, you have to call 911. It's certainly not to have a couple of off-duty mates, put them in a car, take them home, and lock them in his apartment for 2 days.
Counsel, I think the closest case in reading this comes to is maybe the Phillips case you talked about, the Rio case, where we had the three classifications. But in the personal classification, I think a case said if you get sick or whatever and it's due to a personal illness, then that's considered a personal issue and it wouldn't be covered here. So how do we take this case out of personal and put it into this neutral category? I know you touched on that, but I think that's kind of the key to the case, at least from my point of view.
Well, Justice Gibbons, I think that it's clear that the stroke itself is a personal risk. But the duty here had nothing to do with the stroke. It wouldn't have mattered if it was a stroke. It wouldn't have mattered if it was an industrial injury. It wouldn't have mattered if it was an accident, if something fell on his head. Where we start the case, where we start their problems in this case, Harris, is with their duty to render aid. And that's the duty that's laid out in the And that's where Harris dropped the ball in this situation. So it doesn't matter, the fact that it was a stroke, which is clearly a personal risk, doesn't matter. Now the risk is the risk to Mr. Begwin that Harris would completely abdicate its responsibilities to render aid and would simply put him in a car and send him home. Where, by the way, nobody was. They walked him in, they put him in the house, they locked the door, and they left. And he was there by himself for 2 days until his significant other, also a Harris employee, found out about it 2 days later. So I think there has been a lot of focus on the fact that it was a stroke, but I think the fact that it was a stroke really is not very material to what we're talking about. We're talking about the duty of Harris to do more in the face of the facts of this case.
Well, I think you mentioned the Charleston Station case. And I think in that one, there was evidence that the employees were trained in use of these defibrillators, and they had that equipment on premises, and the man was a patron, and he collapsed and had a heart attack. This one's a little different here. I mean, how would you, assuming we agree with you and you're going to trial tomorrow on this, how would you prove this case?
Well, Your Honor, one is the situation that Mr. Mahoney reached, which is where we have policies and procedures to deal with these situations. Well, one can only wonder what those policies and procedures are. In fact, I think I do know what they are because his supervisor, when I took her deposition, told me about a case where she, in fact, suffered an injury at work and twisted her ankle, and what did they do? Well, they called security. And what did security do? They looked at her, they're EMTs, some of them. They looked at her, they put her in a car, and they took her over to Concentra, and they had a doctor look at her. And the doctor gave her some treatment, and she went back to work. I mean, that's the policy and procedure, and that's what they should have done in this case. And so the breach of that policy and procedure is so obvious that I'm not sure. I mean, I would put it that simply, Your Honor. I would say, here's A, this is what they do. I can tell you what they do because this is what they did for her, but this is what they did for Israel.
So your argument is that Harris had a duty to this, to your client, so they breached the duty here by not taking the necessary steps to render aid to him under the circumstances. Is that basically it?
It is, Your Honor, and more importantly, it's the same duty they had to everybody else on the property. It was not a duty that was tied to his status as an employee. It wasn't a duty that was tied to his work as a house person. It was a duty that they owed to everybody who was there that day. And that's the reason why the risk to Mr. Bagwin was not increased over anybody else's that day.
Sir, you said that he was in back of house, correct?
Well,
he was in the casino floor.
That's true, Your Honor, but I don't know how that affects Harrah's duty. I think that the argument that was made by Harris was that, well, if he was out on the casino floor, there would have been more patrons around, there still would have been presumably employees of Harris around. And they all individually have that same duty as agents of Harris, right? They all have that duty. If they see somebody who's injured or sick, they know what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to call security. And so it doesn't matter, I think. In fact, to me, it goes the other way, because in the back of the house, there's nothing but employees. There's no risk that somebody other than a Harris employee is going to see the situation and take it upon themselves to deal with it.
So a 21 dealer is supposed to recognize stroke symptoms by someone playing cards? I've sat next to, hasn't been me. I've sat next to some people at a 21 table who exhibited signs that some might equate to stroke, but I suspect were more likely induced by alcohol. Your client's situation is unique because it is a stroke circumstance. It's different than a heart attack, perhaps collapsing on the floor or a twisted or broken ankle. The argument that this is a response that would be owed to anybody in the casino or anybody on the property is the same as this circumstance may be questionable. What do you think about that?
Well, Justice Hartsey, I think that the analogy that you're making might be comparable if the situation were one where he had just ran into his coworkers out in the parking lot, and at that point they had made the decision, let's take him and go put him somewhere else. But that's not the case. In fact, he came into the building, he talked to Mercedes Reyes, who was a supervisor, and he talked to the department manager. Well, he didn't talk to them, he interacted with them, and I'm not even sure about that, where they both asked him, are you all right? And this is uncontroverted, are you all right? And the response was nothing. The response was a droopy face, and it was drooling. So I think, Your Honor, that I'm pretty confident that a 21 dealer, but certainly not the 21 dealer, the pit boss or the floor supervisor, who observed that type of behavior in a patron would have recognized that this is a situation that's probably not right. Now, again, in this situation, they knew Mr. Bagwin, and we've heard the arguments that he was quiet, but quiet is not mute. And he's there for 45 minutes and doesn't say a word. That is obviously not normal behavior. And I'm out of time.
Counsel, I'm going to give you 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
The circumstances.
I appreciate that.
You have 7 minutes.
Mr. Mahoney, are you saying that there's no duty? Is that what we come down to as far as your position? There's no duty? There was no duty on behalf of Harris? Or are you saying that there was no material issue of fact? Because this is a summary judgment case.
I do believe that I think I have a bit of a nuanced answer to that. This court has recognized in the Lee case and others that where a special relationship exists, such as an employer-employee, that there is a duty to come to the aid of those in peril. Although it's included employer-employee relationship in that, I don't believe there's ever a case where the court has actually addressed that in a situation like this. My answer would be that the court has recognized that duty, but I would submit to you that when the situation falls within the scope of the workers' comp law, in other words, that it arises out of and in the course of employment, and it's an employment-related risk, that notwithstanding any duty, the remedy of the person in question, in this case, Mr. Bagan, is under workers' compensation. I don't see any tension between the general proposition that a duty to come to the aid of an employee in peril and the idea that workers' comp is the exclusive remedy. The duty may exist for both the patron and the employee, and I would also submit that there's a remedy for both. The patron's remedy happens to be in the form of a negligence claim because usually the patron is also not going to be an employer independent contractor and won't qualify for workers' comp, and the employee's claim is under the workers' comp. So I believe that just the district court correctly granted summary judgment on that basis.
But Mr. Gallagher, Mr. Mahoney's point is that if this is a neutral circumstance, and if the response to the risks is the same, or the risk responsibilities, I should say, are the same to the employee as they are to the general public, then under Phillips and as a neutral circumstance, he would have a claim against Harris outside of the workers' compensation law. Isn't that what Phillips at least implies when you find a neutral issue or a neutral circumstance and the risk is the same to both?
Well, I would disagree with the characterization of this as a neutral risk. I believe it's an employment-related risk because it's linked in with the how the employees are trained and what the policies and procedures are. For example, if the evidence was that Harris engaged in quarterly training of 2 hours each quarter for all employees and each on safety and medical issues and things of that nature, and 15 minutes of each quarterly training session was devoted to strokes and detecting the early symptoms of strokes, then I think that would be a type of workplace where if an employee is in the back of the house in particular and can only be helped in that particular type of area by his or her coworkers, then an employee is going to be better off in that situation where, as opposed to an employer, and I'm not saying Harris is this, but an employer just says, well, we don't really care what they know about.
But I understood you to say that the duty of the employer is equal to the employee as well as the patron. Maybe you didn't intend to say that, or maybe I misunderstood it. Are you suggesting that Harris employees have the same duty to respond to a patron, the 21 dealer who observes a player who's got a droopy face and is drooling?
My response was that there can be a duty in each case, but the situations are different. One situation that is different is that the patron, as I pointed out in one of my briefs, the patron, be it at the blackjack table, buffet, wherever, is not only going to be surrounded by some employees of the establishment, but there's also presumably going to be customers and others there. So if the employees, for whatever reason, say, well, we don't care if the guy's drooling and whatever he's doing on the table, face is drooping, at least one would hope and expect that the person sitting next to him or her at the blackjack table is going to say, hey, let's get security or call 911 or something. But in the back of the house, the situation is different because you don't have members of the general public back there to step in, so it's totally dependent on the employee's reaction, which in part is going to be dependent on the level of their training.
So, and so even if this, your argument is you don't want to be issuing radios and badges to employees who come to work and are demonstrating signs of stroke. And the employees are supposed to observe this.
Well, I think it's important to recognize, too, that I don't think that any of the employees in the housekeeping area knew that he was having a stroke. I don't think this was a situation where they said, oh, this guy's probably having a stroke, and they ignored it. It seemed to be a situation where they felt the report from the co-workers was Mr. Baguin is sick. You know, we'd like to take him home. It wasn't presented as a stroke situation. I'd also point out that even if this was a neutral risk, I think the risk that Mr. Baguin faced was greater than members of the general public because, again, in the back of the house area, he would have been subject to how well or poorly trained, et cetera, that his coworkers were to detect stroke or some other emergency medical situation. The people and the general patrons and the public in general under the Phillips test aren't in the back of the house, so the risk that Mr. Baguin faced there, I would submit, was greater than the general public. So even if I think it's an employment-related risk, but even if it was neutral, I think that summary judgment still would have been appropriate on that basis. And about out of time, if there's any other questions.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. And I mean, there are obviously multiple material issues of fact with respect to this case and on all the aspects, I think. It certainly was not right for summary judgment at the district court level. I would address Mr. Mahoney's comment that he thinks that this is a employment-related risk because it's linked into how the employees are trained, but that doesn't get Harrah's off of their duty. The duty is owed to everybody in the property, and there was certainly no evidence that the training was different with respect to how to respond to an employee's situation than how to respond to a customer situation. I think that if the duty is the same, then the training requirements must be the same, and the training should be the same. And there shouldn't be a situation where Harrah's can train their employees to properly respond to patrons, but kind of leave them to their own device in the back of the house. And it seems to me that that's the distinction that Harrah's is hoping to make here.
Mr. Mahoney, I have a question about your suggestion that this is a question of fact. Isn't whether the workman's compensation laws apply a matter of law?
Well, I think that whether or not, as a basic premise, Your Honor, yes, it is. I think the court can decide as a matter of law whether or not a particular set of circumstances falls within workers' compensation.
Right.
The problem here is that
or not.
Of course, the problem is, garbage in, garbage out. If we don't have a clear delineation of what happened here and who did what and what they were supposed to do and what the duties were, then how can the judge make that type of a decision? He doesn't have to make that decision until all the facts are in and there are these material questions of fact no longer exist. I didn't get an opportunity to mention, of course, as you're well aware, the standard review is de novo. The matter underneath, there were several material issues of fact, many of which we've talked about today, all of which I think were covered in the briefs and would preclude Judge Herndon in this circumstance from granting summary judgment in favor of Harris. In substitute to any particular questions? No.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you very much. Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Mahoney, thank you for the arguments. As though this matter will stand submitted. Recess until